Well, good morning, everybody. How are we all doing? Need to make this taller. You can't do this not awkwardly. It doesn't exist. My family and I have been blessed to be part of Hillside Church for just over a year now, and we've really enjoyed our time here. We've really enjoyed getting to know all of you, and it doesn't take very long talking to me to understand or to figure out that I love music, and more specifically, I love guitars and playing guitar. It's, I would say, my absolute favorite thing to do. So I thought I'd start off this morning with a little bit of show and tell, because I have a few guitars. a couple of chuckles over there. I have maybe more than a few guitars, but I wanted to show you two pieces from my collection that are near and dear to me. This guitar, I'm not going to play it this morning, I'm just going to show it. This guitar is, of all of my guitars, my favorite guitar. Absolute favorite guitar, no questions asked. My father bought it in 1978. And when I learned how to play guitar, or tried to learn how to play guitar in 1996, he gifted it to me. And then in 1998, it was stolen from my high school. And 4 years ago, I found it on Kijiji and bought it back. And so I was a little bit nerdy in high school, and I kept serial numbers of all my guitars. And I was able to match it up, and there's a dent on the back of the neck here where I dropped it on Scott Hutchings' piano bench where we were jamming one time. So this guitar was able to come home to me, which was exciting. But my dad bought it in 1978, not because he was a musician. I guarantee to this day he is not a musician. But he said he had met my mother, and they were going to start a family, and he wanted to have music in his household. That was an important thing to him, so he bought a guitar to have in the household. And up till recently, it's been like my main guitar that I play all the time. This is my mandolin. This is another kind of special piece. My great-grandfather, when he returned home from World War I in 1918, said he had seen enough destruction and pain. He wanted to do some creating and bring some joy, and the way to do that was through music, and he went and bought this mandolin. So this has been passed down to me, and I play it quite a bit, and it's just a fun piece of history from the world, but also my family to have. But what they have in common were two men that were not musicians, but saw the benefit of music, saw the joy in music, saw music is something that we all kind of have in common, that can bring joy, that can bring creativity. And neither of these men were believers. But I'm saying to you without a shadow of a doubt today that God has created us to be musical. Now, that doesn't mean God created us all to be musicians, like my father. But he created us all to be musical. And I just want to take a quick kind of lightning round look at some scripture that speaks to that very thing. Nick, if you could, there you go. Ephesians 5:19 says, speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, sing and make music from your heart to the Lord. Colossians 3:16 says, let the message of Christ dwell among you as richly as you teach and admonish one another with wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. Psalm 98, it says, I sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and holy arm have worked salvation for him. The Lord has made his salvation known and revealed his righteousness to the nations. He has remembered his love and his faithfulness to Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Burst, I love that, burst into jubilant song with music. Make music to the Lord through harp, with the harp and the sound of singing, with trumpets, with the blast of the ram's horn, shout for joy before the Lord the King. Let the sea resound with everything in it, the world and all who live in it. Psalm 105, verse 2 says, sing to him, sing praise to him, tell of his wonderful acts. Exodus 15:1, this is right after the parting of the Red Sea. Then Moses and the Israelites sang this song to the Lord. I will sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. Both horse and driver have been hurled into the sea. Psalm 71, verse 23 says, "My lips will shout for joy when I sing praise to you, I whom you have delivered." Even in Hebrews 2, verse 12, it says, "I will declare your name, my brothers and sisters in the assembly. I will sing your praises." There's many, 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 many more moments in the Bible where we see this declaration of music. And you can see that music is a natural response to God's greatness. God does something and people just stop and start singing about it. They can't control the burst of music that comes out them when they acknowledge God's glory. Now, those of us in the room, well, some of us in this room, well, maybe, we kind of understand that. We have a context. We've seen God do things in our lives. We've heard stories about that. And we can understand the idea of singing praise to the Lord, for he is good. But now, not everyone has that context. I told this morning of two men that were not believers, were not musicians, but said we want to have music in our lives. And so we try as a people to kind of understand music and take it apart and define it and, you know, understand it. So here are some quotes from just some people trying to understand music. This is from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. If my friend Jason was here right now, he'd be very proud of me for quoting Jason or Dietrich Bonhoeffer. But it says, "Music will help dissolve your perplexities and purify your character and sensibilities, and in time of care and sorrow will keep a fountain of joy alive within you." Frank Zappa once said, "Music without music to decorate it, time is just a bunch of boring production deadlines or dates by which bills must be paid." Sarah Desen said, "Music is the great uniter, an incredible force of something that people who differ on everything and anything can have in common." Martin Luther once said, "My heart, which is so full to overflowing, has often been solaced and refreshed by music when sick and weary." This is going deep here. Friedrich Nietzsche: "And those who were seen dancing were thought to be insane by those who could not hear the music." This is my favorite one: "Talking about music is like dancing about architecture." Steve Martin. So let's talk about music, right? Let's go on there. So we have this understanding, this idea of like, oh, we want to respond to God with song. We want to burst into joyous songs about him. And then we have the culture of the world who's just trying to understand it. They know they love music. They know that it's the great uniter. They know that it's in us. And we all have that moment where a song comes on the radio and we have to turn it up. Some of us have many moments like that. When I start a road trip with my family, the radio just gets louder and louder and louder because I keep hearing songs that just need to be turned up, right? We try to understand what's going on. We try to digest music. And then we say, so what does that mean about taking us one step closer to Jesus Christ in our own lives and in the lives of those of us around us that we're trying to witness to? I dated a girl one time before I dated my wife, and that was not a good idea. And there's this thing that happens, not by plan, but, and this happened to my wife as well, so she can tell you her story, but any girlfriend I have ever had has ended up alone in a car with my sister, which is never a good idea either. My sister is very, very loving of me, very protective of me, and very blunt with her words. So it can make for an interesting car ride. But what happened was, I said to this girl, who remained nameless because this is getting recorded, but I said, "You're going to be riding to this restaurant with my sister." And her response is, "Well, hope she likes worship music," because that was all that she would listen to, which is great. If you like listening to worship music, I love listening to worship music, that's great. And my sister, who's not a believer, does not like worship music. She doesn't get it. She doesn't understand what's happening there. So when they got to the restaurant, they were both very angry, and it made for a very tense meal, which was one of the last meals I had with her as my girlfriend, for a bunch of reasons. But the idea of, well, she had better like worship music because that's all I'm going to listen to, takes the idea of music being a uniter, takes the idea of music being a universal language, and says, I'm going to put up a dividing wall. I'm going to put up a dividing wall between someone who doesn't know who Jesus Christ is and someone who does. And as Scott has been preaching us through, that's not the kind of conversations we want to be having. See, there's something fundamentally different about what's happening in music in general and in worship music. It's a different whole structure. Nick, there's a structure picture. If you can go there, no, the next one, we'll come back to that. And right there. Okay, so in general music, we're going to do a little diagram here. In general music, it starts with writers and producers of a song. That's it. We're going to write a song, and we're going to produce it. We're going to make it look really nice, and then we're ready to just release it. And so that group of people directs, hit the next one, boom, the band or performer. Okay, so we have this performer, this band, Eric Clapton, whatever it's going to be, and we have its producers and writers, and they get that song ready, and then that band performs that song for us, the audience. Right? That's why it exists. All the songs that exist on the radio that we listen to, which would be called secular music, not worship music, exist to entertain us. And we like that. We like being the center of attention. We like being the purpose for someone doing something. Right? So we love music, and that's what it's designed to do. But when we look at worship music, there's a flip going on. Nick, hit the next slide there, my friend. So we start here with the band or the performer or the song. And that band or performer or song directs us to perform for God. So the audience is flipped. There's a whole different dynamic happening in what's going on. So to say to someone who's listening to, I don't know. I looked at Meredith, so I just thought of Bon Jovi, just to pick a Bon Jovi song. Meredith, what's the best Bon Jovi song? Living on a Prayer, right? So you're in the car, and you're with someone, and you're just like cranking. Johnny used to work on the docks, and Union's been on strike, and you're singing this powerful rock ballad, and you're singing along, because I'd sing along really loudly as well. And you're just singing a story, and you're entertained, and it feels good, and you're loving it. And then if a worship song comes on next, you're changing this dynamic where you're just singing to God. You're no longer, and that, for someone who's riding along in the car beside you, my sister, for instance, it's like, well, what do you, this doesn't make any sense, right? It's a different dynamic, it's a different culture. So how do we, with that knowledge then, of what's actually going on, witness, take one step closer, and bring someone alongside who Christ is. And so, Nick, if you could go back to that that last slide, we're going to look in John chapter 4 at a passage some of you may know, some of you may not, but Jesus being very evangelical to a woman of Samaria. Now it says, when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, he left Judea and departed again for Galilee. And he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, wearied from his journey, was sitting beside the well, and it was about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For the disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." And the woman said to him, "So you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty nor have to come draw water." Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." And the woman answered him, "I have no husband." And Jesus said to her, "You are right in saying, 'I have no husband,' for you have five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. What you have said is true." And the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is a place where the people ought to worship." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming where neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem you will worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know. For salvation is for the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is here, where the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God in spirit, for those who worship him must worship the Spirit in truth." The woman said to him, "I know the Messiah is coming, he being called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things." And Jesus said to her, "I who you speak to am he." So we have this moment where Jesus is just really kind of giving us the blueprint for evangelism. But he's doing three very, very specific things in that. Nick, if you could go past the diagram slides to the three things. So the first thing is, he ignores the social taboo. The thing that sets us apart, he finds a common ground. So he's sitting at a well, a lady comes to a well. What's the common ground? They're thirsty. Right? We don't need to go any deeper than that, but they're both thirsty. And so Jesus starts a conversation. He engages her. But doing so, he makes a very bold statement that, like, "I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to the Samaritan woman who I have no right culturally to talk to." And sometimes, as Christians, we want to make a stand like my old girlfriend, that, well, I'm only going to listen to worship music ever. That's all I'm going to, that's what I'm going to be about. And I love worship music. I love singing it. I love playing it. It speaks to me. But even in the Bible, there's a whole book about a guy just singing to his wife about how much he loves her and other things. You can read that at home. Right? So there's this expression of love through music. And so to limit ourselves in our relationships with others by saying, "I'm only going to be listening to worship music," we really are not willing to cross what isn't really as much of a social taboo as Jesus crossed here, but to find common ground. I used to work along McQuaid and Waterloo. Wally got so excited. There's been no reaction from Wally all sermon. And I said, "Long McQuaid," and he was like, "Let's go." He's going to go start the car up. And I loved it. I loved that job. I learned so much. I met excellent people. And there was a customer who came in, and his name was Danny Michelle. And Danny Michelle is a Canadian folk artist who I wasn't even aware of until he was my customer. So he came in, he was my customer, and I'm very relational, so he quickly became a friend. And we had a bonding one day over moose meat. He said he'd never tried moose meat. And I said, "My mom just shot a moose. Would you like to try some?" And he said, "That'd be great. I would love to try some." So I brought him some moose. He loved it. We became fast friends and quickly entered into deeper conversations. He then brought in his newest CD. He says, "Here, this is my new CD. It just got pressed, just got released. I want you to listen to it and tell me what you think." And so we played that CD in our car for a long time while Grayson was actually in womb. And it used to be his lullaby after he was born. We put that on. Or Bon Jovi. Those are the two options to put him to sleep. And so on the song, on the CD, there's a song called "If God's on Your Side." Now, in our conversations, I told him I was working with youth and I was going to church, and he said, "Just so you're aware, I'm a raging atheist." His words, not mine, a raging atheist. So he had this song, it was called "If God's on Your Side, Who's on Mine?" And it was a commentary on religion, on war, on the state of our culture. And it's actually a very well-written song, Musically, it's fantastic. And there's some good lyrics in there, but lyrics that to some of us might be offensive. There's one portion of the song where it says, you know, you light your candle for luck and put your money in the cup, hoping that if God's on your side, who's on mine? It says, you quote chapter and verse about how your book got here first. If God's on your side, who's on mine? When all I see is hate and greed and people fighting in the streets, if God's on your side, who's on mine? Right? And it's this cry about, why is religion so messing up our world? And so I had the CD in my car one time, and a friend of mine who was a Christian was like, what are you listening to? Like, what is this nonsense? And I said, oh, it's my friend's CD, Danny Michelle. He's great. He's great. And this friend who was involved in church music was very upset by the context of this song. And I said, well, what's the cool thing about this is I get to talk to him about this now. I get to engage in conversation, and he's still a raging atheist, but he's also still my friend. And I got to have a conversation where I was like, Danny, I think your song's backwards. From where I stand and what I understand and what I believe, it's not if God's on my side, but if I'm on God's side. Right? God doesn't need to pick sides. God is true, firm, steadfast, never changing. Are we going to be on his side? And so that led to other conversations, and he almost came to youth group one night to play the song for our youth group so we could talk about it. And then he said, I'm just scared to be in a church. And he wouldn't come. And so that was a friendship that it's hard now because he's further away, but I was able to engage in that without saying, like, how dare you say such blasphemous things about my, because he doesn't follow the rules I follow. If I go to a hockey game, I'm not going to get a penalty because I'm not on that team. I'm not playing that game. Someone who doesn't believe what we believe, they don't follow the same rules and structure as us, so we need to understand that if we want to meet them where they are, if we want to get them one step closer. The idea of evangelism often is I want to lead somebody to know Jesus Christ. And if you don't, you failed knowing that. But evangelism is just telling people how to get one step closer to Jesus. I interviewed at a church while I was in the process of getting hired here. There was a couple of churches I was interviewing at. And one of the questions they asked me is they said, who's somebody that you've been evangelizing to and tell us a story of how they came to Christ? And so I said, well, I'm not going to tell you a story about how someone came to Christ. I'm going to tell you a story about someone I'm evangelizing to. And I mentioned Kenny, like little Kenny, the guitar player. Because I've known him since day one of my ministry. He walked into my office and said, who are you? Bud? And I said, he's a kid who's been with me for the last 8 years at that point in time. And I said, he comes to church and now he plays guitar. He said, he's not a believer, but we're having these conversations, we're doing life together. And this church's response was, if you've been evangelizing to him for 8 years and he's not a Christian yet, that's not the kind of investment we're looking for. So we didn't take that job. He said, But that's this idea of, like, what's your closing argument? What's your rate of conversion? And now Kenny, here, well, we all know what Kenny's done. He's accepted the Lord. He's gone to Tyndale. He's interning here. He's doing great. And it was all a matter of how do we get people one step closer. So Jesus breaks down the social taboo. And he says, I'm going to do maybe what's not looked at as appropriate by my peers. And then he goes on. The next thing he does is he gets to a relational level. He quickly turns the conversation from water to, like, go get your husband. Let's get real here. And he gets on a real, real tough subject for this lady to talk about. I'm pretty sure she's not going around bragging about all her exploits. That's not something that she would lead with when she's meeting somebody for the first time. Not her best foot forward, but he gets there, doesn't judge her, he just, this is what's going on, go get him. Let's have a conversation. And sometimes we're scared to get at that level with people because that takes something from me. To get at a relational level, it's a give and take, and it's an investment. And relationship costs you something. And so Jesus is willing to do that, so we ought to be willing to do that as well. Because that's where we're going to see things happen. And the third thing he does is he boldly tells the truth. He crosses a social taboo. He gets at a relational level. And then he boldly tells the truth of the gospel. No questions asked. And so I would say that this is a very hard three steps for us to do today, unless we have that starting point of common ground, of being thirsty, of being at a well, of yearning for water. And so when Scott asked me to talk about music this morning, I thought there's no better common ground in the world than music. It's everywhere. This right now might be the only time today you don't hear background music playing. It's in our cars, it's in our homes. We try to understand it, it's so permeating us. In 1997, two Russian scientific analysts, their names are, they're very Russian names, Komar and Melmid, they said, we're gonna figure out the scientifically most unwanted music we can, because there's so much music around. So they put together all the facts and the findings, and they put together a 21-minute song featuring a children's choir, bagpipes, operatic rapping, corporate sponsorship, the mention of every major holiday in the United States calendar, and yodeling. And I was going to play it for you this morning, and Scott and I decided that would be a very bad idea. I was going through my sermon prep, and Scott was like, what is going on in here? And it's like, oh, this like burst of music was coming from my computer. But there's so much music around. It's in everything we do. There's so many styles and variations and preferences. There's people that like good, strong melody with great lyrics, great band arrangements. There's also people that like jazz. That was a music joke that like four people got. Just play the right notes. But preference aside, we all have music that we love. We all have music that speaks to us. We all have music that, without it, life would be boring. Without two notes, da-na, Jaws would mostly be a movie, just a footage of water. And it would not be exciting, but that da-na makes that movie exciting. Without its incredible soundtrack, Rocky would just be a guy running upstairs. As opposed to a movie that makes me weep every time I watch it. Once a year, my mom and I watch Rocky and just both cry and like, don't judge me. We have a soundtrack to our lives and a soundtrack to our stories. And we're willing to meet people where they're at with this great, easily accessible common ground. We can then ignore social taboos, get at a relationship level with them, and boldly tell the truth. And again, understanding our job is not to say, now you're saved. Our job is to get them to take one step closer to who Jesus is. So my question this morning, my challenge, my final thought is, are we, hit the next slide, Nick, are we looking for moments, just moments, to boldly exclaim how great our God is? Are we looking for any moment we can to boldly exclaim how great is our God? Let me pray for you as the band comes up. Lord, we want to thank you right now that you created us to be filled with joy, that you created us to be musical beings, Lord, and that we can enjoy music on many levels. We can use it to praise your name. We can use it to sing to a loved one. We can use it to make somebody laugh, Lord. But this morning, as we look at taking one step closer to you, look at leading others one step closer to you, whatever that looks like, Lord, that we would be able to take something like music, and whatever our interests are, Lord, but as an example, as a common ground, as a meeting place to say, here's what I believe. And I have a God that is incredible and loves me more than you can imagine, and also loves you. Just thank you for this morning, Lord.